you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Mark Striegel.
John Astronomy.
The Talking Metal Podcast. Coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. And now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and I am here doing it old school with John Astronomy. We're out at a bar. We've been drinking. How are you?
I'm doing great. Mark Striegel, rock and roll
so
forever.
This bar used to be called 7B.
B.
But now it's a little different. It's changed since back in the day.
It has changed. I am watching the Pittsburgh Steelers.
A lot of plasma.
My favorite team on the screens.
How are
they
doing?
I say screens, I say there's multiple screens. They're doing great. They're winning. They're beating the Panthers 31-14.
Well, John, on this episode, we have, Ghost Steelers, definitely. We have Scott from Skeleton Witch. They have a great new record out, Devouring Radiant Light, one of my favorites of the year. And another one that's going to be probably on my top 10 for the year is an album called I Love You at Your Darkest. And it is by a band called Behemoth. And we are joined once again by their leader, I guess I'd call him, Nurgle.
Nurgle is
amazing.
Last
time we interviewed Nurgle, it was you and I on his tour bus. And at the end of the interview, we did shots with him.
I love that. Nurgle, I always remember
and
the
Emily
great
did shots
interview
with,
him, too.
She was there, too. Emily, you did shots with him, too, yeah.
And see, Nurgle and I share the Polish heritage.
Yes.
So that's an amazing, you know, what do you call that? We got a bond.
Yeah,
we got a bond. Plus, we love metal, and anybody who loves metal.
And I
think Emily may have said that. Anybody who loves metal.
Hey guys, what's up?
You know, anybody who loves metal deserves to be heard.
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to get right into these interviews, but I first want to mention what we were doing here. Lynn is here with us. Emily's here with us. We are kind of coming from. What would I call it? A melancholy event?
Yes.
Which was a celebration of a friend of yours, a guy we had on Talking Metal. We did an excellent interview with him, by the way.
No doubt about
YouTube,
it.
Which I'm going to link through today's show notes. It is so good. I watched it recently. His name was Todd Youth. He recently passed away. He most recently had been playing with Nick Oliveri from Queens of the Stone Age in a band.
We had our pilot episode of Talking Metal.
Yeah, our pilot TV show. In the band Blood Clot, he played with, what a diverse guy he was. He played with Glenn Campbell.
Yes.
Ace. He played with Murphy's Law. He played with Danzig. I mean, the list goes on and on. Chrome Locus. You know, it just goes on and on. Cheap Trick. I think he wrote a song with Cheap Trick.
And here's what people don't know. There's a lot that you don't know that Todd Ghost played on a lot of major records for a lot of artists, including a lot of bands with younger guitar players. And they may have not been as proficient in the studio as a guy like Dave Murray would have been. So what do they do when a big-time producer is producing a record? They let the other guy play the part, and then they call in Todd Youth, and he redoes it.
It's really amazing.
And this is something, I don't even know if we ever discussed this on Talking Metal, But Todd Youth would go in and replay the parts of bands. And sometimes the bands don't know that Todd went in and redid their parts.
Really? That's amazing.
How funny is that?
And are these big-time bands you're talking about?
Big-time bands. Wow. I'm talking like, I don't know the, you know, official names, and I, even if I did, I wouldn't say, but I'm talking like major bands that have big hits, and instead of their guitar players, Todd Youth went in, redid their parts, and the guitar players don't even know that it wasn't them on the record.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of people at this memorial, a lot of New York rock and roll staples like Jesse Malin, Trigger, who ran the club, the Continental.
Yep.
Noel, who was a sound man at the Continental for a long time and has recently been on tour with bands like Dinosaur Jr. and Monster Magnet. It was a celebration of Todd Youth's life. The chick from, what, Cycle Sluts from Hell was there. So many others that we're not mentioning. But Todd Youth will be missed. I know you worked with him closely when he was in Ace's band.
Yeah.
And Todd, what was his history with Ace? Just because I know we have so many Kiss fans that listen to this.
So Todd was brought into Ace's band by Anthony Esposito.
After Anomaly was recorded?
Yeah, after Anomaly.
Right.
And Anthony is amazing. He's currently working with Jakey Lee.
Right.
In Red Dragon Cartel. And
Patina,
he brought Todd
new
in.
Record. Patina.
Yeah,
Patina.
Yeah, new record,
Patina.
New record.
Patina?
And,
Patina.
Yeah, Patina. Yeah. And brought Todd in, which I thought was amazing because I thought this is the first time that Ace had a guy in his band who was...
See, I'm learning something. I didn't know Esposito brought...
Yeah, Anthony brought Todd
in. Wow.
And for me, when I heard Todd was in, I was like, oh, my God. Ace has got, like, a guy that I consider, like, one of these cool guys from the New York scene in.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the band. And what was amazing for me was to realize that Todd was, out of all those guys, the guy, like one of the guys that I bonded with more than any of the other guys.
Yeah.
So Todd, who I always thought of as some super hipster cool guy, was more down to earth than anybody else.
Yes. Yeah.
And what's really funny is there was a incident, not an incident, like not a negative incident, but a situation in Pittsburgh where my parents had to transport Todd somewhere. And Todd became, I don't even think I was in the vehicle, and Todd became friends with my mom and dad. And Todd told them all about some of the times he had with Glenn Campbell and how his parents really liked that. And they became real big fans of Todd.
Well, I know Todd's dad, he said in the interview that we did with him that he had done all this stuff. Danzig, he toured with Motorhead, he, you know, all this stuff. And it wasn't until that he got the gig with Glenn Campbell, you know, kind of country legend from, you know, this, what, late 60s through the 70s, that his dad was like, well, you finally made it. You know?
Yep, yeah. With the Glenn Campbell gig. And Todd was amazing in that. And by the way, guys, I just want to let you know, Todd was playing a baritone guitar, as far as I believe, maybe a silver tone or something similar to that, and just was amazing in all that Glenn Campbell stuff. And then my history extends even past Ace stuff. I tour managed Todd's other band,
really,
Chelsea Smiles, for one gig. And it was an amazing gig, opening for Guns N' Roses.
Emily and I were at that show. Remember? Do you remember the Chelsea Smiles opening for Guns N' Roses? That was at Terminal 5.
Yeah, Terminal 5 or one of those West Side bars.
Yes, and we sat by, oh my God, we sat right by B.B. Buell. And didn't she turn around and say hi to us?
Yes, she did. And,
that's
and
amazing.
And she hugged us and stuff, and she remembered that we'd interview her on Talking Metal.
I remember I saw our good friend, Sex Kitten.
Right, Sex Kitten. Yeah, of course.
I love her. I love her. From the Guns N' Roses forums, and that was a great gig. And
that's not the one that killed herself, right?
No. That was it.
There was some girl from the Bumblefoot and Talking Metal forums that killed herself. I forgot her name, but
was a different girl who she was a guest on Talking Metal.
She was. We've had a bunch of guests. I mean,
Yeah,
Todd,
you
included. We've had at least a half dozen guests. No,
person I was referring to is a very successful designer in clothing,
right,
and she's doing great.
Right.
I don't want to get her in trouble. So right. I'm just gonna say she's doing awesome, and she's rocking and rolling all night long every day, as they say, every day. By the way, I
remember you tour managing for Chelsea Smiles.
Yeah,
that was an amazing thing.
Yeah. So here's what's so funny is that Todd Youth, and this is before I even understood exactly what I did, but he trusted me to handle that GNR gig, which was a big gig for his band at that time. And that was even a separate thing. It had nothing to do with Ace Frehley. And I'm blown away, Mark. The way I'd be blown away if one of our, not one of our rock star friends passed away, but one of our closer friends, like the people that we went to college with or the people that we grew up with passed away. And it's freaking me out.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's freaking me out.
I hear you.
And I don't know how to handle that. And I'm telling you this right on Talking Metal. I don't know how to process that.
It's tough to process. And he was a young man, Todd Youth, a talented man, so diverse from the New York hardcore scene to the country music scene to the classic rock scene. This guy did it all. Let's listen to the Chelsea Smiles right here on Talking Metal. This is Nowhere Ride.
Let's get nuts.
in peace. That's Nowhere Ride by the Chelsea Smiles. We just came from his memorial service at Niagara, and we are around the corner at a club that bar that used to be 7B. I don't know what it's called now. Do you?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I know they're showing football, and let's get back to Todd and the people he played with. Todd was an amazing musician. One of the bands that he played with was called Degeneration.
Degeneration was amazing. He didn't play on the first record, but he joined them later.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who he replaced. He then took Howie Pyro with him to play with Danzig for a while.
Correct.
Howie Pyro was part of Degeneration. He had a great band, which is very hard to locate their music, but they were called Chrome Locus.
Yep.
They were a classic rock guy. Classic rock style.
Now, Jim
band.
Hennigan was part of Chrome Locus,
yes,
correct?
Yes, he I believe did some of the he did the bass and some of the vocals. I think Todd did some of the vocals. Todd Youth was a very diverse guy, from punk to metal to rock and roll to country. He did it all, and he is a great loss. And I knew him just a little bit from meeting him through you, but he was a friend of yours. And John, my condolences.
Thanks, Mark.
He's
Thank
a guy
you
who,
so much.
Who trusted you, obviously.
He did. He really did. And I remember one Christmas, and I even feel a little bit bad about this because Todd had an issue with his flights and some other things, and he was having something else going on, and I was working with him on that, and it kind of took over my whole Christmas one year. And
right.
I just I wish that and here's one of those things that it says if you know somebody who might need help with something, reach out to them.
Right.
But at that time, of course, Todd had no indication of any of that stuff, but and I don't even know the details of what's happening, but
what happened?
Todd was just a great guy who was a close friend of mine, and I have to say I'm not handling this properly.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss due to Talking Metal Toast.
Thank you.
Mr. Todd Youth, and we're going to get into some Talking Metal interviews. Up first, this is the one and only Nurgle. Friends with the Cardinal Copia from Ghost, by the way, very close friends with him, I believe. Maybe I'm wrong, but from what I understand, he is. And this song is called God Equals Dog, followed by my interview with Nurgle. This was recorded on October 31st, Halloween. What better day than Halloween to record an interview with Nurgle from Behemoth? And this is off their great new record, I Loved You at Your Darkest. It really is a freaking phenomenal record. You should check it out. Extreme blackened death metal at its greatest. This is Behemoth.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we're welcoming back to the show Nurgle of Bohemoth. Nurgle, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm actually in Boston, where we're having a day off today. 1 week into the tour. Things are great.
Cool, cool. And the new album is just awesome. I mean, a masterpiece, really. I loved you at your darkest. Great,
well,
great stuff.
You.
I'm really enjoying it. And I want to get into some of the stuff you talk about and sing about on the album. But first of all, going back to 2014 when The Satanist came out, I mean, there was talk, and I think it may have even came from you, I'm not sure, but that may have been the last Behemoth album. And I was just wondering if at that time you felt like you had another album in you.
No, at that time I was completely blank. I was out of any ideas. I had no idea what, you know, which direction, which way I would or should go after The Satanist. I mean, on one hand, it felt like, you know, we can go anywhere. But at that time, I was in oblivion. It was,
right.
There was nothing there. And I just decided just to take it day by day and just tour the record and see what happens, you know, just go with the flow. And in the meantime, I did Me and This Man album, which I guess helped me out to kind of revive myself and come back, you know, to the Behemoth camp, like super excited and passionate about making new music. So I guess that was the point. That felt very natural for me, like to make things that way.
Right. And that album was very different. So I guess maybe that was kind of a liberating thing for you. It was allowed you to express other parts of your
Absolutely.
Creativity.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, like, I remember when we did The Satanist, there was this, you know, Father Satan on sound, there's this singing part in the yeah. background. It's like a male choir in the very background of the verse. And I didn't do it myself. I just asked a friend of mine to, you know, to sing it for me, because I was just, you know, I wouldn't even dare to do that. Well, this time I was like, okay, I mean, there's parts that kind of require semi-singing, semi-choirs and stuff. And I just decided to do it myself. And I think I really, like, pulled it off, like, pretty good. And, like, songs like Barzabella belong to my, you know, all-time favorites from Behemoth, Rooster. So I guess it's the job was done well.
Right on. Right on. And the album, of course, opens up with Solve. And then I guess two songs later, we get into God Equals Dog. And one of the themes we hear on that is this I Shall Not Forgive, which sounds like it's being sung by kids. I think in both Solve and God Equals Dog.
Yeah.
Is that the,
yeah.
Do you have actual kids come into the studio to do that part?
Yes, we have the whole like kids choir.
Oh, cool!
Being part of that experiment, so to say, because it was an experiment. But then again, you know, I should kind of go back to Me and This Man, you know, because that's where I did that for the first time.
Right.
I used kids for the song "Cross My Heart and Hope to Die," and. And I really love that experiment in the other band, you know. And I thought, oh, it sounds awesome. It's good, you know. But I mean, as much as it fit the aesthetics of Me and This Man, I was like, with Behemoth, it might not work, or it might sound like very disturbing, which is actually the point why we play radical and extreme music, because we want to disturb people.
Right.
I mean, the reason why we're playing this is not to make people feel comfortable, you know. I mean, that's, I think, like, in the, it should be like a very source of like every extreme art making, you know, every like the main motive should be that, you know, just, hey, I mean, we need to shake the world.
Yeah.
We need to make people uncomfortable and make them think and just smack their faces, you know. And just, I just thought that confronting the Queen's Choir with such an like extreme statement, because it's some kind of like a statement, invocation or prayer, you name it. And I think it just worked out amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. And immediately, like you said, it puts people outside their comfort zone. And I think that's it's just a really strong way to open the album. And again, like I said, you return to that theme in God Equals Dog. When you say, I shall not forgive, what are you actually getting at there? Do you believe in forgiveness? What are your thoughts on forgiveness?
You got me. That's a tricky question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the reason I wrote it is that it's just, you know, it's a very like inversive statement, you know, that it just goes very literally against the Christian dogmas. And that's why I use that, you know. But in my daily life, I'm like, I don't really want to use this Christian terminology here, you know. But like, if you really wanna live like a good life, you know, you better just fucking, you just let go, okay? You know, right. You have to let go. You have to, if you wanna fly, if you wanna just go further, and you don't need that extra baggage, you know. So in this case, what it means, you know, is like if lots of people like wrong you and stuff, you know, like the best way is just to, you know, not to ignore them, but just to understand them and somehow pity them, you know, pity them, because there must be like a lot of people that are hurt and that have this immense pain, you know, within themselves, you know, and problems and issues, you know, that they try to project on other people, you know. So like in most cases, you know, people have problems with you. It's not that you are the problem. It's that people have problems that they project upon you. So what you can do, you can just try to understand them. And I don't want to use the term forgive, just be sympathetic, you know, just right. Be sympathetic. And like in most cases, I'd be like thinking, hey, you know what? You're a fool, but so am I. And we're just part of this universe. We're just part of this life that's, you know, maybe 50 or 80 years long, and that's it. And then we die, and we both suffer.
Yeah.
I don't know if it makes sense, you know, but to me it does. And in the end of the day, you know, I really think like, I mean, we're all going to die, man.
Yeah. You know, I spoke with you back in 2007. It was actually when you were on Ozfest. So it's been a while since we've spoken.
Oh, wow.
But at that time, one of the things we spoke about a lot was how people have this need to follow, and they'd rather be told what to do than think for themselves. And I was just wondering, these many years later, I mean, here we are, what, 11 years later, Have things gotten worse in your mind? And I'm not just talking in the States, I'm talking globally. Are people even less able to accept reality than they used to be?
I guess so. I mean, like these days we live in an era of populists, and with like a lot of like leaderships, leaders of like the big, the biggest countries, like, are not even biggest countries, you know, like in Europe, we got like countries like Poland or Hungary, you know, and you have like leaders that are being populist and they just win over. And it proves again, you know, that people would just easily follow, and they want to hear what they want to hear, you know. And if you're like a good manipulator, you can easily trick, like, you know, cheat them and make them follow. And I mean, yeah, I mean,
right.
I don't think that like people really change much throughout the years. You know, I think people are pretty much the same. It's just the circumstances that change, and you think, oh, the world is getting worse and the world is getting this. No, I honestly think that the world remains the same. just things change, the tools change, and times change. But like things happen, like same things happen basically, you know. If you look at the history in a wider picture, you see that it just like wars, they did like it's on a repeat. Wars, yeah. Death, plagues, disasters, people are born, people die. This never changed. This, and it's just, you know, the aesthetics around change, the circumstances change. But so I don't think like it's different than like 600 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
But that's also one of the main reasons why I would never say like to you know to behemoth crowd, you know, yeah, follow me. No, I tell them think for yourself. You got your own brain.
Yeah.
Be your best friend and just and don't even trust me, you know, just because I'm no role model here, you know. I'm just trying to make my living and I'm just trying to stay as free as us independent in this world full of slavery of any kind. And it's very difficult and I struggle. So what I advise you, think for yourself and find your own ways. Don't follow me.
Right on, right on. And I mean, you have an incredibly devoted fan base. We've seen you on Instagram posting shots of their tattoos.
They're the best.
Yeah, I mean, they're deeply touched by your art, and some of them claim it's saved their lives. I mean, how do you view your fan base? What is your relationship on a maybe even a spiritual level with them?
I'm just touched, man. I'm just touched. Like yesterday, I met this girl. Woman, a fan, and she said, "Hey, you saved my life." And then she elaborated a little bit, like, and, you know, when the meet and greet was done, I listened to her for a little bit, and she's like really like super honest when she said, "A year ago, I was about to commit suicide, and your music, you know, your attitude, just, you know, kind of spoke to me that I must carry on." And I have nothing, I have nothing to lose, you know, just, you know, but trust these people when they say that, why they would even come to me and say things like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I really think that they're like being sincere with me, you know, and it feels good. It feels good because life is the highest value known to, I don't know, to me. So you know, embrace it and cherish that. You know, it's amazing, and it feels good. You know, because I know I'm part of like a very vital energy, which like a very like uplifting wave that is that behemoth is, and there's people that feed on that, and it's good.
Right on, right on. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you in New York City this Saturday. You will be rolling through, I think it's the Best Buy Theater, so I cannot wait. And again, the new record, I Loved You at Your Darkest. Just, I mean, the production and the message, the lyrics, the whole package, I'm just really digging. I think it's such a powerful artistic statement.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We've been playing 5 songs of this new record. The set list is long. It's 18 minutes. We have new production. It's pretty fucking big, so I hope you'll dig it.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. And you know, we saw you on the Slayer tour earlier this year, so I'm looking forward to getting a lot more behemoth this Saturday night in New York City.
Absolutely. And just know the fact that there is this Dull Art Darkest exhibit in Last Rites.
Okay.
Yeah, just you know, just make your note and be there, because we're gonna be there after the show.
Oh, cool.
And it's the Last Rites.
Is that Paul Booth? Paul Booth's
yeah,
place,
Paul
right?
Booth
yeah,
gallery.
Okay, right.
And we are having our exhibit there too, so.
Okay, if it's the place I'm thinking of, it's not far from where you guys are playing. I think it's...
awesome.
Yeah, it's in the same neighborhood, Midtown Manhattan there. So yeah, that sounds awesome. Thanks for telling me about that.
Awesome. Cool, man. So we'll see each other there.
Perfect. Okay, Nurgle, always a pleasure. See you Saturday.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Cheers.
old school behemoth right there, going back to 2004. Conquer All from the Demigod record. I'm hanging with John Astronomy. Lynn, Emily is here.
Lynn, you're on the podcast. Say hi, Lynn.
Lynn is
quickly
shaking her head no. Peace. Peace.
Mic.
I like
into
that.
Into the mic.
Positivity.
Peace.
Peace.
She says peace. She's for peace in all countries and all languages and all styles of the music industry. She
cool.
She wants the slight rockers to get along with the harder rockers, and you know, I'm kidding. I'm just
right.
joking.
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
David Lee Roth.
She, her friends. She wants to see David Lee Roth have a three-way with David Crosby. I'm kidding.
Wow, okay.
Let's get back on to our Talking Metal show.
Yeah. The Crosby, Stills, and Nash connection,
yep.
Of course. Was it Stephen Stills, Crosby, Stills, Nash?
I actually want to see Ace do a Southern rock thing. I want him to get with Greg Allman's son and with Elijah.
Right. Cher's son, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Elijah Blue, right. Now in Sammy Hagar's book, it's not David Crosby. It's either Stephen Stills or Graham Nash. I believe it's Stephen Stills is totally coked out in Sammy Hagar's book. And like would come to Cabo Wabo.
David Crosby more than Stills, but who the hell knows?
Yeah, no, this is more recently, like
wow.
like 10 years ago.
Wow.
And all he'd want is cocaine, and Hagar would make some calls.
He was
yeah.
quite thin when I seen him in Charlottesville.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. You got to read Sammy Hagar's book. Fantastic
yeah.
read. I think, what is it called? The Red Rocker or something? I'm not sure. Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we got to get into our final interview. This is with Scott from Skeleton Witch. Great guy. And what a story this band has had. Just insane.
And I have to say that guys from Skeleton Witch stopped by my desk because they're buddies with my coworker, Matt Handley. And those guys are amazing.
Yeah, they really
and
are.
And I am big fans of the band. And I just saw them in a new issue of Guitar World magazine.
Nice. Nice. This is When Paradise Fades by Skeleton Witch, followed by my interview with Scott from Skeleton Witch.
Oh! Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line we have guitarist Scott Hedrick from Skeleton Witch. Scott, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I appreciate it. We're doing a coast-to-coast call here from, what, your Jersey City, and I'm in Los Angeles?
Yeah, man. Well, I'm actually outside of Jersey City, but I was going to ask you where you are, because you guys are originally from Ohio, right?
Yes, we are. We are all Midwestern guys, and that sort of, I think, has formed our work ethic in the band. You know, it's definitely similar salt of the earth type dudes from there, but now we are spread out all over the place. We've only got one guy still in Ohio, a guy in Minneapolis, a guy in Portland, Maine, and I'm in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So
really all over the place.
Yeah, it's a logistical nightmare for touring.
Yeah. And when you guys get together to rehearse, where do you actually do it? Do you meet in the middle, or do they come out to LA, or what happens?
Home base is still in Ohio. It's not all growing up there and one guy still being there. It's just easier because it's cheaper. There's more space. Literally, there's more space for less money to utilize for rehearsing, for storing gear and everything. So, yeah, we assemble in Ohio, gear up for, you know, a week or so prior to a tour or recording or any, like, major, you know, undertaking, and sort of regroup, catch up, probably drink too many beers and get caught up and do the thing.
Right on. And, you know, it's been, from what I've been reading, and you know, you can fill me in, but it sounds like it's been quite a ride for you guys these last few years, I would think, emotionally especially. And the new record is out now, Devouring Radiant Light. I think it sounds fantastic, man. I really, really am enjoying what you're doing. I think you've gone a different place musically, and I think it's for the better. And I got to congratulate you on this great new record.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It truly does mean a lot to me. I personally, within the band, you know, every band works differently. And with this particular record, I ended up writing more of the material than I normally would. And so some of the shifts and some of the very obvious, I guess, hallmarks of my writing style on this record, like the longer songs, the layering of guitars, the more sounds I brought in, some of the ambience, and just I took it in a different direction a little bit than the band had been in the past. And I think with the change up of vocalists that happened, you know, I think it was needed in a lot of ways. It was needed just because, you know, I don't feel the same way I felt about metal and certain types of metal that I did when I was an angsty, like, teenage into my early 20s kid, you know, young adult. I was more into thrash and death metal and more extreme stuff and more just, I was a kid, I was juvenile, and I was more aggressive and angry, and I wasn't as much into subtlety, and couldn't appreciate songwriting in a way I can now. So to just sort of beat a dead horse and pretend to be the same people we were when we started this band, you know, as ourselves and literally as a unit, would just be, you know, fooling ourselves and lying to ourselves. And you know, I think that would have resulted in a worse record and worse art if we had just pretended to be the same band literally as members, you know, pretend that the new guy is the same as the old guy and keep things the same. So, yeah, so there was a huge shift there with the personnel, and with, you know, with writing duties. It wasn't really something we discussed. My son Nate and I had a lot, our other guitarists are kind of that, we are the main songwriters, and we're the two original members. We've been doing this since the beginning. So, you know, we certainly had some interesting and difficult conversations once we kicked out Nate's brother, Chance, our former singer, for his, you know, awful behavior and a multitude of things, really, that, and so, you know, that's not an easy thing to do, especially if, you know, anybody that's been a band for that long, but especially for Nate, because that's his brother. And, you know, I think that also speaks to Nate's dedication to the band, but also perhaps to just how awful Chance's behavior had become, that, you know, Nate was like, look, I understand that we can't be in a band with this guy anymore. I get it. Even though he's my brother, this is tough. And so we had some tough decisions, and then as we moved forward, there was sort of a gap, and I guess it was difficult for Nate to get writing again because, you know, because things had changed so much. So I sort of stepped up and filled in that gap until he sort of got his writing legs again, and I ended up sort of altering the sound of things. And yeah, it seems to be the response is great. I mean, there's certainly a few thrash maniacs doing the same thing again, but you know, that bothers me little to none. The response, especially in Europe, has been overwhelming as well, where I think we finally are turning a corner over there where we're getting a little more respect, right, and we're seen as more legitimate, more, you know. Someone said, I don't know if this might be a stretch, but one journalist said that you know, you guys went from just like entertainers to artists with this record, in their opinion. This is an Italian journalist.
Yeah, so I can see that.
I think
definitely.
I know what he means. Yeah, so anyway. Yeah, so...
And in a lot of ways, there is more of a, and I don't take this the wrong way because I think it's a good thing, but there is more, I would say, of an artsy sound there at times. And you mentioned the soundscaping, and were there other different types of music you were listening to that influenced the sound of this record?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I still listen to some metal, and I try to keep an eye on what's coming out and keep my ear to the ground, so to speak, because, you know, we're swimming in those waters and it just behooves me to know what's going on. And I still enjoy it to a degree, but I would say the majority of my listening habits are non-metal, and particularly for this record, some of the stuff I was really listening to a lot while writing this record was a lot of free jazz.
Okay.
I really, really got deep into Pharoah Sanders and Don Cherry and Ornette Coleman and a lot of these American free jazz artists. And that was a huge, huge thing. And I also got much, much deeper into composers and soundtrack work and minimalist composers. Like, you know, some of the more obvious ones would be like Philip Glass or, you know, Steve Reich or those guys. I became a huge fan of this guy, Ryuichi Sakamoto. He did the soundtrack to The Revenant, which is kind of his most popular recent thing. But he's an awesome ambient and noise artist who puts out records, solo records, and he also scores films and plays art exhibits and stuff. So I've been a huge music nerd for a very long time, and in a lot of ways it hasn't really manifested itself in our band until the EP before this record, and then this record when I really sort of asserted myself creatively and stepped up. So it's not to say that, like, I mean, I understand what I'm saying might sound ridiculous. I'm not saying that we sound like those artists, but I am saying that you can, you know, in the same way that you can see a film or read a great book and then be inspired to write a song, music doesn't have to translate literally. Like, I listen to Pharoah Sanders, so I try to emulate Pharoah Sanders. You can still be inspired and reach for different textures or sounds or ideas, or think about composing in different ways or layering, you know, sounds or dynamics in different ways from stuff too. So, you know, I'm not going to suggest that it sounds like those things, but I would certainly suggest for a fact that that's what I was listening to incessantly in between writing sessions for this record. It had a definite impact on me, for sure.
Right. And when did Adam actually come into the fold with you guys?
Oh, let's see. I'm so bad with time. So see, let me see. We put out his first release. Devouring Radiant Light is his first full-length release with us, but the first thing he did with us was an EP called The Apothic Gloom, and let me see when that came out. I'm Googling our own releases. Let's see, that came out in April. It came out in August of 2016. So Adam joined sometime, I want to say, in late 2015 or early 2016 then.
And had you known him ahead of time?
Yeah, we had. He's the vocalist in a band called Wolfhammer from Minneapolis, which is where he lives. And he was in a band called Veil of Maya for a little while as well as their singer. And we toured with him in both of those bands throughout the years in different times for different lengths of time. And so we already knew him as a great vocalist. There was no doubt about that because we'd watched him perform. And then in addition to that, having spent time with him on the road in his band, you know, we knew he was a really solid person, like a really nice guy. Being from Minnesota, he shares a sort of a similar, he has that Midwestern politeness, you know, almost too nice. He's a real sweet guy and like real considerate and fun and easy to tour with. And that's equally important for a band like us, who historically has been on the road a lot, to have a unit that gets along well and gels, and having kicked the guy out of the band, we know how bad it can get. We went from a band that was it was all fun and we enjoyed it to where it got really, really negative and dark and weird and finally getting, you know, it was stopping that situation and removing the negative influence from the band. You know, we thought we're not going back to that place again. So it's important for us that we knew he was a good human being on top of it. So yeah, we had a long history with him and it was a no brainer. It's been great.
Cool. Well, that's great to hear. And it sounds like emotionally the band is in a much better place. You know, I read the Pitchfork article that was just did a really good job and kind of explaining everything that went down with your former vocalist. And you guys left him, Chance, behind basically in the hotel in Massachusetts, and you continued the tour without him. You just continued on playing instrumental, which I think is really incredible. Was there a point when that tour ended where you were like, hey, the band's done, you know, this isn't happening anymore? Or did you know when you were out there playing these instrumental shows with no vocalist, did you have a feeling, hey, we're going to keep this going? Like what was your thoughts about the band and the future of the band at that time?
Sure. Yeah, I think that, I don't think anybody, it was, the future was in jeopardy to be sure. But I don't think, I know at that point, no one was saying, all right, when we get home from this, you know, we're done. I think the decision to do those shows instrumentally was that right there, I think, was our decision to continue the band. If we were just going to stop, you know, why even bother finishing those shows?
Right,
I
mean, right.
You know, it was another week of shows. And it, of course, there's a little bit of money for playing, for performing, but it's nothing that's that insane that we, you know, well, if we don't do these, we're going to go, you know, we're going to go belly up or something. If the whole thing was going to be done, I think we would have just folded then. So the decision to continue that tour was the decision to continue the band. But what was in jeopardy was how we would do it. Would we get somebody else? You know, I don't know if Nate had notions of maybe trying to repair things initially, you know, until Evan and I voiced our opinions of, you know, we cannot and will not work with this guy because his behavior, you know, you can't walk back what you've done. And he crossed the moral line for Evan and I think for Nate as well. So it was uncertain, but I think we knew we were going to continue. And when we did get home, you know, Nate and I did have some conversations about, you know, should we continue? But I think looking back, like I said, the decision to finish that tour without a vocalist, I think that right there, we knew we were going to keep going, even if we
right.
had to talk about it a little bit more. Yeah. So it took a minute. It took a minute to regroup and get it together. But I would also, you know, I would argue that it's for the best. I think if things continued, and even if personalities and even if someone hadn't acted horribly, I still think that the band creatively, you know, if everyone was behaving properly and not, you know, if nothing bad had happened, I still think that creatively, the way things were run and structured wouldn't have sustained a lot of growth and longevity, because I think I would have burnt out on what we were doing. And this was a much needed thing for the growth of the band in a lot
right.
of ways.
And you can hear that growth again, guys, on this brilliant new record, Devouring Radiant Light by Skeleton Witch. We're talking with Scott from the band. And you guys are playing some shows with System of a Down. And I must say that I almost feel like with this new record, like before this new record, you know, before your kind of redirection musically, that would have probably made less sense to me. But hearing where you guys are at with things musically now, I still think it's an interesting match, but it almost makes a little more sense to me. Is that something you could see too?
Yeah, I could see that. I think what we're doing now meshes better maybe than just the more straightforward thrash type stuff. And, you know, I always personally enjoy a good mixed bill of bands. You know, I'm not, I get bored when, say, there's a one-note sort of lineup. You know, there's 10 death metal bands. It's a death
right.
metal extravaganza. Like, oh, God, that sounds horrible. I don't want to pay to be subjected to that for, you know, 8 hours or something.
Right.
It's like, pay me. That sounds like a day of work. Like, shit. You know, maybe one or two of my favorite death metal bands. But so I think it's cool that they're presenting a diverse lineup. I mean, At the Drive-In is on it as well.
Right, right.
Which is another a band that was that I really, really loved their album, Relationship of Command. And it's funny too, because like teenage me loves this lineup more than I know, because when I was 15 years old, I couldn't drive. My dad dropped my friend and I off to a show where we saw Mr. Bungle, System of a Down, and I forget who else was on that bill. And then within that same, you know, maybe a few months later, I went and saw At the Drive-In and the Murder City Devils in Cleveland. And needless to say, those were two like really formative shows for me as a 14 or 15 year old.
Right.
And so to be playing, you know, some shows with them is great. And the reason we're doing it is the reason we got asked is that Chavo, the bassist for System of a Down, really likes our band.
Oh, cool. And
yeah, he'd been posting about us on his social media and talking about us. And an endorser hit me up and said, hey, like from a string company, he said, hey, you know, Chavo from System of a Down seems to really love you guys. We had him at some event. He was just telling everybody about you. And I looked online and sure enough, he was posting about us and stuff. So I reached out to him, sent him, you know, some vinyl and like a t-shirt and stuff. And once I ended up moving out here to LA, we got in touch. And he just would text me now and then about music or this or that. And we sort of became like, you know, just occasional texters, like he'd ask me about certain riffs or things or a song. And it was really funny that the guy from System of a Down is like, dude, who wrote this riff? Or this song is like, oh, this song's awesome.
That's great.
It was really funny. One day he texted me and said, you know, give me a ring. And I called him up and he said, hey, you want to play some shows with us and At the Drive-In? I said, yes, I do. And he said, all right, I'll have the management and the agents and everything do all their stuff then. And we'll let them sort it out. But like, welcome aboard. And
that's awesome.
We are.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And, it's an old fashioned thing. I mean, that doesn't happen very much, you know, anymore. It's unfortunate, but a lot of tours are put together by, you know, one band or another. There's a lot of lobbying to get bands involved. There's a lot of, I mean, this is no shock to anyone, but not every tour is just pieced together because the band whose tour it is likes every band and really wants them on it. They are often brought a list of bands and told, like, you should get these guys. They'll bring in heads to the show. You know, they're, you know, an up-and-coming band. You know, there's a lot of influence and bullshit involved. And it's really cool when a dude from a band such as, you know, that a band like System of a Down is just like, dude, your band's cool. You want to play some shows?
Yeah, it's amazing.
That never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So that means a lot that they're that size of a band and they're still willing to do something like that.
Now, is Dustin playing drums on the new album, or who's handling the percussion?
Yeah, Dustin played drums on the record. And then drumming for us right now is like, so Dustin played on the record, but he had a lot of, he had various personal issues he needed to take care of, and had he had a lot going on, and he and us like agreed together. We were like, dude, the road is not the place for you to sort of get your life in order. And so we need to grab somebody else to tour and do these things. And you need to focus on yourself. And he agreed 100%. We still talk to him. We're still buddies. Yeah, check in and see how he's doing. So, he unfortunately is not playing with us anymore. So on this one, the System of a Down, our friend John Rice is playing with us, and he's played with a lot of different bands. He was the original and still is the drummer for Job for a Cowboy when and if they play shows again. But he also filled in for Behemoth's drummer on the tour when Behemoth opened for Slayer.
Okay.
Like sometime this past year, and he's done a lot of like pretty high profile gigs. He's
yeah, that was recently. I just saw that. That was like this past summer, right?
Past summer. You couldn't tell because he had all the makeup and stuff on. You know, they did him up to look like a Behemoth member. And he was the drummer's wife was having a baby, I think, and he stayed behind in Poland to be there for it. And so, yeah, so he's an incredible drummer and really nice guy. And another Midwesterner. He's a when he moved out, he was in Pittsburgh at the time. He's a big hockey guy and a Midwest dude, and like just a sweetheart of a guy and a ridiculous drummer. So we're lucky to have him on board for when we can have him, because he's always doing a lot of stuff. So we'll see about the future, but at least we're set for now.
Cool. Well, Scott, it's been great talking with you, and it seems like it's really a new chapter for Skeleton Witch, and I'm excited by what you guys are doing and what lies ahead for you. You're doing some touring in Europe in early 2019, is that right?
Actually, late 2018.
Okay.
We will be over there from mid-November to mid-December, and then nothing is announced yet, but this spring, like April, May, we'll be doing a U.S. headlining tour, it looks like. So, you know,
people
keep an eye out for that. We should be having dates posted soon. Yeah. Yeah. So,
cool.
It's about time. We need to do some more U.S. dates. So, that's coming. So, Mark,
right,
I appreciate your time, though. Thank you for having me and talking to me about our band and everything. It's very much appreciated.
Well, I appreciate you talking with us, too. And the best of luck with your System of a Down shows. Those sound really great. Good luck with that.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Keep in touch. Thank you.
All right, guys, Skeleton Witch, that song right there, The Vault, off the great, great record, Devouring Radiant Light by Skeleton Witch. I've been listening to this on YouTube Music, and it just is a fantastic listen. We've all found ourselves down a rabbit hole on YouTube. There's so much music to discover there. You can spend hours exploring new songs and artists. And now there's an app, actually, that makes it so much easier. YouTube Music is a brand new music streaming service, combining everything you'd expect from a streaming service with the magic of YouTube to bring it all to life. YouTube Music makes it easy to find the music you're looking for, official albums, singles, music videos, live performances, even covers and remixes. And, you know, this is really cool because if you don't know the song's name, you can actually go in there and search it by the lyrics and it'll come right up. It's that easy. Great stuff. And with YouTube Music Premium, it gets even better. Get ad-free music that plays with the screen off or while using other apps. Finally, enjoy your music wherever you want it, even when you're offline. Come on, guys, let's step it up for YouTube Music, a great, great place. We all love YouTube, and YouTube Music, you're going to love it once you try it. I suggest the premium. You can download the new Music YouTube app. It's just try it out. 30 days free. If you like it, you can then enjoy music for just $9.99 per month. Terms and restrictions apply. YouTube Music, it's all here. Now, back to Mark and John at the bar 7B, located on Avenue B and 7th Street in the East Village, New York City. NYC, baby.
And that's about going to do it for today's show, John. Can we end with some more Todd Youth?
We should end with some more Todd Youth.
Now, and unfortunately, Chrome Locust is not available. All right, so let's end with
that.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
You want to do his most recent thing that he did with Nick Oliveri, a little Blood Clot?
Let's do that Blood Clot stuff.
Cool. This is Slow Kill Genocide, and it is by the band Blood Clot, which featured another Talking Metal alumni, if you will.
Nick Oliveri.
Nick Oliveri from Queens of the Stone Age and Caius, among many other things. Mondo Generator. Love Mondo Generator. Anyways, that's going to do it. It's always a pleasure hanging out with you, John. It is only 10:25. I feel like it's 3 in the morning.
Well, I feel like it's like, 4 a.m. right now, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And, Mark, I'm glad to be here with you tonight,
yes,
paying tribute to one of my best friends ever, a guy that I admired so much.
And he admired you, man. He trusted you.
Thank you.
I will say that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate you saying that. And I'm honored that I had a chance to work with a musician as great as Todd Youth.
Yes. And guys, this guy goes into all his history. I think it's a fantastic interview that John and I did with him not that long ago, really. And it's up on YouTube. I'm going to put it in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. Go learn about Todd Youth, because, again, this interview we did with him, John, it's fantastic. It really is a great watch. So pay Todd Youth some respect. If you don't know who he is, go watch this interview. If you do know who he is, you're going to love this interview. And rest in peace, Todd Youth. Thank you, guys. This is a little Todd Youth with Blood Clot, Slow Kill Genocide.
Thank you, brother. I love you.
Of a dying breath. Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.